and welcome to episode 11 of the Romantically Inclined podcast. Today, I am bringing you Eve Dangerfield. Eve and I have actually conversed a few different times, and we just never run out of shit to say. So she has a new book coming out that we're going to be talking about. And yeah, she's also co-author of one of my favorite books of all time, Captivated. And I literally never shut up about it. So if you recognize her name, it's probably because of how often I have typed it in my stories. Eve,
yay!
Why don't you introduce yourself?
My name is Eve Dangerfield. I am Australian, if you can't tell from my voice. And my roof has just started leaking today. So I look forward to ongoing developments in the stability of my roof.
I really hope you're just updating people periodically in like your Instagram stories. As your roof slowly collapses in on
me, calling my landlord, being like, dude, okay. It's happening.
Now you're bringing up a landlord, and like, we know what happens with landlords in your life. I know you have created another.
No, I wish. Like, honestly, I don't think I've seen a sexy landlord in my entire life. Real estate agents in general, like, just not a sexy group of people.
That's actually a very good point. People are always talking about how billionaires, and I am also people, about how billionaires are, you know, talked about as like these gorgeous men who all have BDSM fantasies, and there's no handsome billionaires, really. I think there's I made that comment once, and somebody DM'd me a picture and was like, well, what about this one? And I was like,
I'm like, that's the exception that proves the rule. You can't just be digging up random fucking billionaire 107 over there. We're talking about
I think it's like 112 or something. They were like, what about this one? But it's like that with landlords. Like, has anyone, and if you are listening and you do have a hot landlord, please DM me
information. Actually,
anyone have a hot landlord?
I can absolutely say, like, my partner had a hot landlord who was like an ex All Black, like a rugby player, like in New Zealand. And then he was like an ex rugby player, like very good looking. And he and his housemates, who were girls, especially the girls, would constantly be like, "Ooh, are we having a landlord issue? Do we have to call him? Do we have to call him over?" So I stand corrected there. But my landlord is not an ex All Black. He is just some fucking guy who won't fix the roof.
This makes me wonder, though. So my friend Michaela, who is always the third episode of the month, also has her kid's principal is like an ex-rugby player. So are there just like famous ex-rugby players like just taking menial
very
jobs
much so.
All around Australia? Like, what the fuck? Is your hairstylist also an ex-rugby player? Like your grocery store bagger, like, I need to know what they go on to do, because it sounds like they just retire and take like all these jobs you'd never expect. Like, football players in America do not then become school principals. They do not become like,
what do they do? Like, surely a lot of them, like, you know, you retire at like early 30s at the latest. What do they do with the rest of their lives?
I don't know. Most of them, I think something like 92% of professional athletes, at least in America, are bankrupt or like broke within. Like, because they have terrible financial management.
Totally.
You write that book where like a professional athlete desperately needs financial advice and hires like some female accountant to be his, you know, like, I want that story.
That's really true. Cause I did sort of do that with Derek in Return All, where like his whole thing is like, his manager was like, you have to basically be handheld because you've pissed millions of dollars up the wall. And he's like, not even, but yeah, you're right. That is kind of a sexy idea. It's like, you're this like total like spendthrift. Although, like, I suppose my thoughts immediately become, you know, if as a woman, then she's kind of doing all this like labor for him. So, but then you could kind of have this like dilemma where it's like, he'd be paying her for it, so it's like sexy.
Then you have like the forbidden aspect of it,
but client
financial literacy, which is super sexy.
True, that is
like,
very,
that's very hot. Like, he learns how to budget over like a night of like drinking at the bar, you know. He buys him his first calculator, like shit like that.
He's talking about stocks and like long-term investment, and it's all very sexy. It's sexy stuff.
Remember, like, my dad's an accountant, and like, it ruins it for me a little bit.
Oh no, that's fair. Yeah, that's very true. I'm like that with like male school teachers because my parents are both teachers, and when people are like, ooh, sexy, I'm like, sorry. I'm like, no.
So you did mention Return All though, and I always recommend this because there's been a few people lately on Reddit who have been looking for female billionaires. And I'm always like, hey, I got one for you. And I don't read them too often. I know they exist. And I it's just not a trope I'm necessarily like going out of my way to find, like, but apparently some people are. And but there was a conversation the other day on Reddit about how billionaires, like, you can't write a billionaire who is not like financially taking advantage of people, basically, and that makes not sexy for a lot of people. And I was like, well, let me tell you about this female billionaire who runs like a housing nonprofit and steals houses from fucking rich ass landlords and people in Australia. And they were like, oh, tell me more. That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, that's like my absolute fantasy thing. If I had billions of dollars, I would just be going around to auctions, just outbidding rich people for their fourth house and being like, I'm going to give it to someone who actually needs a house. Yeah, that was like a pure expression of power fantasy on my behalf.
See, I'm loving that. I forget, what is the name of the series with Return All and Begin Again Again and First and Forever?
The Rebirth series.
Oh, right. Rebirth. So I think it's so funny that these books that, yes, they are all in a series and they kind of connect with the side characters, but they don't, each book is so different from the other ones that they're almost, it's like three different worlds that just all have like combined somehow through these secondary characters and whatever. And I'm curious, which one was your favorite to write? Because I know which one is my favorite and I'll talk about it in a sec, but so Begin Again Again, for anyone listening, is the first one. It takes place like post-COVID-y, like things are getting back to normal. We have Return All, which is the female billionaire, and then we have First and Forever, which is like a delightful himbo helping a hot mess female DJ advance her career through
trying to
fuck up play and cleaning her apartment. Can you guess which one's my favorite?
Returnal was like the quickest book I've ever written. I like wrote it in 2.5 months because we were still like, we went back into a lockdown and I was basically like writing every day. And I think I just got a really good vibe with it. Like, and I really like those characters. I really like Derek. Like, I know people are like, he's a dickhead. I'm like, yeah, he's my dickhead.
I like that. I don't want a hero. You know, I want, it basically, the book starts with grovel. Like, who fucking doesn't want that? Like, I don't want to wait until 3/4 of the way through a book for him to fuck up and have to grovel. No. Although that happens too, I guess. But
that is true. I think it's, people want more groveling. And I totally get that. Like, I have like such a, like, I respect that if that's your vibe. But like, there's a certain point where for me, groveling becomes insincere. So I feel like I was trying to walk that line like relatively carefully, where I didn't want every single scene to just be him being like, oh.
I wouldn't have fit his like vibe like that.
He's not,
he's the dom in their sub dom situation. And so to have him groveling too long and too deliciously pathetically would have been disingenuous to his character, basically. It just wouldn't have fit.
And his character was the kind of guy, and it sounds very silly, but over the course of the book, the thing that I love the most is that honestly, characters kind of become a little bit real to you. It's like, he's the kind of guy who turns his back and runs away when he's scared. So it's like, someone who freezes up. So it's like, it's not consistent with someone's character if their response to emotional kind of overwhelming feelings is just to run away, to be really forthright with their feelings, even if they're trying to apologize. So I like that was kind of a conflict throughout the book. It's like, I'm really sorry, but like, I'm still working through some shit.
Yeah. He didn't just like get the girl and then forget that he has all this fucking
baggage
behind him. Yeah. That's a better word for it. Baggage that he's dragging, which I think happens a lot. It's like, oh, and I forget what I call that usually, but you know, magic dick, you know, but usually
magic pussy.
And it's just like, they suddenly are having sex and all of their mental health issues like fix themselves. It's like, no, I still have depression. I still have anxiety. Like, I'm not like, sorry, your dick did not like just magically fix the chemistry in my brain, bud.
Heal all of us. I feel like it's such a tempting idea in and out of romance novels. You know, new love is one of the most powerful, like engrossing feelings there is. And I totally get it. But it's like, yeah, I think anyone who's been in a long-term relationship ever knows that eventually the dust kind of settles and you are back to being with yourself. And you still have to kind of, you know, you might have at best 2 years of being like, and then it's kind of like, yeah, back to reality.
It all comes crushing back. You're like, oh no, good thing I didn't stop taking like my medication during those two wonderful years.
Yes, exactly.
I was thinking though that that reminds me of Act Your Age, where like Ty has to like grovel for his fucking life, basically.
Yeah, he fucks up
so bad. And I love that for his character though, that he really had to work to get her back, even though it seemed like, you know, at a snap of his fingers, he might have been, you know, previously might have been able to like get her to do whatever he wanted. Now she's not. And I recommend this one all the time too. I read a lot of daddy kink books, and like this one is, I think, one of the first ones I read, and it like hooked me.
I'm really glad.
Bad. I don't know what it is about like Australian daddies. It's just like it hits different. I don't know.
They're so brisk. I feel like I really liked Ty. And even now, because like I did write that a fair few years ago, you kind of feel this weird distance between yourself and your books where it's like, I look back and I'm like, oh my God, I was 24 when I wrote that. Like, that's crazy.
That's incredible though, like, to me, that you were 24. And I mean, I just, that book is amazing. So it just, I'm always shocked when I find out authors' ages though. Like when I found out how old Talia Hibbert was, I was like, what the fucking fuck? I think she was like in her early 20s. And I was like, are you serious? I'm 31 and I can't even write a fucking grocery list without messing it up.
Yeah, but you write amazing comedy skits on Zoom, like on Reels. I was going to say on Zoom. I'm like, no, we're on Zoom. You're on Reels. Yeah, like I couldn't do that. I wanted to say like, I'm so impressed. I like my like social media output has fallen off a cliff because I've just like have not had the energy at all. And like people who can, I'm like just in awe, because I was like, I find it just like, it, how much work does it actually take you?
It is actually pretty draining. I'm shocked that authors, there are some authors who can do both, like they're like cranking out books and they have a social media presence, because I'm like drowning and just, it'll take me, well, like yesterday I made like 20 reels in like an hour, but like I would say 19 of them are crap, and I look back at them the next day and I'm like, what the fuck were you thinking when you made this? And the worst is like, you have to really balance, because if you spend an hour like brainstorming a reel and doing the reel and editing the reel, and then it gets like 100 whatever hearts, it's like, what, like you have to, I don't know, there, I don't necessarily care about the likes, but I care about looking back at how much time was spent on something. And I think it's probably the same as like you pour your heart into a book and then you share. I've interviewed some authors who are like, one of my books absolutely bombed. And I just think like, wow, you spend so much time on something, you put your heart into it, and it just doesn't get the reception that you kind of hoped it would. So it must be like my feelings, but times 1000 when you are writing a book that you spent fucking months writing. Speaking of which,
all I was gonna say was like, yeah, like, sorry, social media on top of writing a book is like, I'm already tired from doing that first thing I committed to, and now like there's like another thing where I'll try and do a TikTok sketch, and by the time you finish filming it, editing it, I'm like, that was 2 hours and like 40 people saw it.
You're like, I could have spent that time writing, or like, you know, like, it's just like,
it's a big
social
commitment.
Media is whack.
Yeah, sorry for like totally fucking up your awesome segue. You were about to be like, speaking.
Well, no, like just because I was thinking, I'm like, you just finished writing a book recently. It comes out next week, Velvet Cruelty. And I'm like, I don't know what it's like in this period of time between finishing the book and waiting for it to release. Like, what are you doing? Are you just dying a little bit? Are you excited? Are you nervous?
It's really good because Dangerous Press, like the publisher, like it's a publishing house. It's the first time I signed with a publishing house in like years. So it's like that experience of like, I haven't actually had to do anything. Like I'm just sort of like sitting around witnessing things happening around me and being like, because usually like at this point I'm buried in work, like I'm trying to schedule stuff and I'm trying to like reach out to people, but like people are just like sending me one email updating me on everything that's going on and I'm just like, thank you.
so it must feel so different.
It does, but I'm trying to like actively, you know, like the worst people that you ever work with are like in upper management and still like micromanage. Like I'm like, you cannot become that person. Like if you want more rest and you want to be able to focus on your books, you have to let other people do shit. So I'm really trying not get in there and be like fucking too weird about it.
Yeah, because you're like, I went with the publishing house to not have to do all these things. And yet the indie author in you wants to control it all.
Totally. And the and the anxious person in me is just like, if I don't control everything, it's all going to collapse. Which isn't true. But I'm about to actually finish the second book in the series this month. So
wait, like shit. So you already like finished book one a while ago then. And doesn't your manager like usually make you take, or your editor, whoever, you're always like, oh, they're making me take a break.
Because we're getting out, I didn't realize this, but it totally makes sense. Like some people will not start trilogies until they're finished. Mm-hmm. So we're on quite a tight publication schedule. So like, obviously this one will be done this month. And then the third book will be done in very early 2023. Mm-hmm. So I kind of just took a few days and then jumped straight back in. And it's been such an interesting experience. Like we can totally get into it, but like, because I've never written cliffhanger books before, it's kind of cool. It's more like you're writing one big novel mm-hmm. rather than writing separate novels, if that makes any sense.
So you really don't want to take a break. You're like, you don't want to lose the voice. Yeah. You don't want to lose the characters. Yeah. You got to just like power through.
Yes.
Why don't you really quick tell us what Velvet Cruelty, and by us, I genuinely mean us. I read the blurb, but this is maybe the first time I've ever interviewed an author without reading their book first, but I just got it and I just didn't have time. So I'm very excited because I can just hear it like a reader.
Yes.
All my listeners are going to hear it. Yeah. So tell us about Velvet Cruelty, which is a why choose.
Yes. Reverse harem novel. So it's a bit of a game, like it's a bit of a game changer for me. Like you've read a few of my books, but this is my first person POV novel. Mm. It's a modern retelling of Snow White.
I didn't know that.
If you look at the cover, like it's got like the little girl like holding the apple. It's a very gorgeous cover. Like Dangerous Press did such a good job. But yeah, modern day Snow White retelling, which kind of goes into the reverse harem thing. I'm sort of like, if you're going to do a reverse harem, you'd probably pick Snow White. And it's quite dark. Like that was where my heart kind of was when Dangerous Press approached me. I was like, can I do a dark romance? And they were like, yeah. So I was like,
they're like, it's in the name. It's in the name. Danger.
Yeah, we're called Dangerous Press. We're not called Baby Fence Press. So I really jumped into this. So it's the story of January Whitehall, who is a woman, well, she's just turned 18, but she's promised to a billionaire by her evil stepmother. And she's kidnapped on her wedding day by four men who have a revenge vendetta against her fiance. So they've kidnapped her sort of as a pawn. And then things transpire.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious, now that I know it's Snow White, do any of the four men represent any of the seven dwarves in any way, shape? Is one of them dopey? Is one grumpy?
You're reading my mind. So I was immediately like, look, we're not doing the seven dwarves. That is like, so the way I did it was one of them is the huntsman. One of them is the prince. One of them is nicknamed Doc and has doctorly related qualifications. And one of them is nicknamed Basher, who is very bashful and who is like kind of a good boy. And then they live in this place called Velvet House, which is like this old, like 18th century mansion kind of in Albany, New York. And they also have live-in staff who make up the rest of the seven dwarves.
Oh, so, that's brilliant.
Yes. So I was like, I can't be having someone called Sneezy and like trying to make them a romantic lead. Like I'm not a fucking miracle worker. What do people want from me?
But it makes total sense that you chose Doc though.
Yes.
Like, Zach has like, I mean, of all the dwarves, he was definitely the sexiest dwarf. And I don't know why. But he was. And I am not the only one who believes that. I have read many a fan fiction. No, I'm just kidding. I haven't read any doc fan fiction, but it exists. Guaranteed.
Yes. This is true. I don't, like, I tried to, like, I really wanted there to be Snow White themes. So there's also other, I don't want to give too much away, but there's like heaps of other Snow White things sort of melded through the narrative. Cause I really dislike if you're doing a modern retelling and you kind of just use the name and none of the other concepts. Like, I really wanted it to kind of be a reflection of Snow White. And I think January kind of is that. She's my first ever virgin character, but I feel like for Snow White, that's appropriate. Like, purity is kind of like her brand. And the whole thing of her kind of really enjoying, I have her that she really loves cleaning and she really loves cooking. Like, she's this rich girl, but I think she just, in her heart, she really kind of wants to be working with her hands. So I feel like that works with Snow White as well. So yes,
this is wonderful. So this first book is out next week. Second book is out early 2023. And what's like the predicted for the third book?
I think April the 11th is the predicted third book, which
will be reasonable. This isn't like freaking the 90s where an author would write one book and you have to wait like 2 years for the fucking sequel to come out. And you're like, what is happening? That kind of happened to me with A Court of Thorns and Roses. I read books one and two, didn't know the third book was not out. Realized that, and it was like coming out in a year, and I was like, this is trash, like, this is fucking trash, everything is trash, and I never finished, I never read it.
Yeah, you're like, I can't handle. Yeah,
I actually have it. I bought it though. It's like up there somewhere. And I plan on reading it one day.
to be continued.
What are some of the, so we have virgin trope and obviously like forbidden and maybe a little bit like enemies to lovers in there. Are there any other tropes the reader should know that they can find within there?
Definitely. So what I kind of wanted was for each guy to have a different dynamic with her. With Eli Morelli, who's kind of the guy who runs the crew, she very much has a daddy little girl kind of relationship. Like, he kind of wants her, it's not explicitly, but that vibe where it's like he's just like, you need a man to tell you what to do, and she's like, I don't know. And then with Bobby, who's like the bashful one, it's like he was pretending to be her math tutor, so they have like a very sweet kind of like old school, like kind of wanted almost like a YA romance novel vibe between them. So it's like they kind of have this where he's like kind of almost like a big brother, but also, you know, kind of like, I'd say like brother's friend's little sister kind of a thing, that dynamic. And then Doc and her, like, Doc is a psycho. He's like an absolute nutcase. He's like the loose cannon of the group.
Yeah, he's total like sense to me. Like,
murderer. So it's totally bullies to love it. Like, he's just like bullying her relentlessly, is so mean to her, calls her tits, like, is just like, and I loved it. I loved being able to write bad men. Like, I was just like, these guys suck. And I'm so here for it. Cause it's like, it's very liberating to just be like, they're not nice people. You can just have them be assholes. And Adriano, the final one, is just a stone cold murderer. He's like totally Beauty and the Beast. Like, he's all beast. He's just got scars. He's super mean. He keeps saying he wants to kill her. Like, it's,
I love it. I do actually love that, though, because I know that there have been some complaints, like a few people in my DMs have been asking for like reverse harem why choose books, but they've specifically been like, I need books where each of the guys has like a different dynamic with her, a different personality. They're sick of reading where like both guys are just daddy doms with the same, you know, you could interchange them and they'd be the same character. It's why I loved, I don't know if you've read Baby and the Late Night Howlers or anything, or Lola and the Millionaires, but by Catherine Moon. And those are both like what you're describing yours as, where like the characters have different, just completely different relationships with her and with each other. And it's, oh, that's a question. So is it strictly male, female? There's no male action in the
male. Yeah. It was like, it was sort of like,
I'm going to want them to fuck. Like, I'm going to want it.
Yeah. But I mean, we all want that with everyone.
But it's okay that doesn't happen sometimes. It's okay, Kate. Like, no, everybody has to fuck all the time. Okay. No, I'll be out there like writing fan fiction of your books. I'll be like, haha, guess who's fucking now. dark and bashful.
Yeah. That's, you know, what I want. I always think like maybe in like some crazy world, if like a rich person is like a big fan of mine, like, and like will pay me to write fan fiction for them. Because someone did offer to like pay me to write a sequel to Taunt once. And I like sort of considered it, but it was like not enough money to justify kind of like taking 8 months of my life. And, but like, I was just like, yeah, if like someone like wants to pay me a significant amount of money to write a fan fiction where my characters do weird things to each other, I will consider it. I'm putting that out into the universe.
I know, I don't know if you've read any of Lily Maine, but she basically did that for her just for fun. Like, she, they're very short. They're like 3,000, 5,000 words here and there. But on her website, she like, people were like, but what if this happened? What if like the monster found himself in like a sex toy shop? And she was like, interesting, I'm going to write it. And so she would just like write the little story. And I know some authors have been doing that in their newsletters as well, where they're just like, hear like a bonkers idea. And they'll just be like, fuck it, I'm gonna write, like, I'm gonna write that. I'm gonna see what happens there. And that's, I'm gonna write for your newsletter this story. After I read this book, I'm gonna write, I'm gonna listen to what the masses want, and then I'm going to write it, and you can publish it in your newsletter. It'll be awesome, and we'll not lose you any followers at all.
I'm sure so many people will like it. It'll be incredible. It's just like, again, my like time limits of like, if I had to try and write slash fiction of all my characters, it's like, oh god, it would never end.
You'd stop me. You would just get way too into it. You'd just be like a 100,000 word like novel about like Ty and Derek just like fucking daddy doing it.
Oh my god, yeah, wow, that's crazy. Because it sounds really pretentious, but like, I think like the, because the first book with Velvet Cruelty was the same, like the hardest part is pulling the world out of nowhere and making people out of nowhere and kind of building characters. So it's like by the end, they kind of are really real to you, which is why Silk Malice, the sequel, has been so much easier, because you're like, oh, I know what to do. Like, it's already there. So like having the tie in my head and the Derek in my head want to have sex immediately just like blew my mind a little bit. I'm like, oh my god, that's crazy.
I have a lot, I have a lot of other ships for your characters, so if you ever need them, let me know. I do want to gush about, so obviously I mentioned earlier that First and Forever is my favorite book I've read of yours so far, although I just say like I mean, I may love it more than Captivated. Like, I may, is saying a lot, but you don't get to read that often about just an absolute mess of a heroine. And I appreciate, although I will say like Mara was kind of, she was a billionaire, but she was also kind of a hot like mess behind the scenes a little bit. But Eden is just her entire life is fucking falling apart. And it was nice to read a heroine who did not have her shit together. She wasn't a 23-year-old like doctor or like you know, scientist or freaking like on her way to make partner by 24, which I feel like a lot of people just, or like a bakery owner.
Yeah. Oh, totally. I had that with Velvet Cruelty for January. I think the only thing that really got me through it was knowing she's Snow White and she is a fantasy, because she's probably the first of my heroines where I was like, I don't think she reacts like a human person to anything, but like but she's just a very stereotypical to me romance heroine. You know, she's sweet, she's considerate, she never, whereas like, I think it's a little more of a struggle sometimes to kind of produce heroines that are a little bit more complicated, because people are like, I don't know, it made me feel things
that I wasn't that's why. I mean, August was also a hot mess.
Yes,
like she was doing how do you pronounce it,
nangs,
the whippets,
we call them nangs.
She's doing like nangs, like the first scene we meet her, like just whippets from her like fucking whipped cream can, and Mara's like literally the most terrified of commitment person I've ever like met in a book ever.
Yes.
And then like your heroines are just like, let's just fall apart, and like we're gonna just let, you know, the men don't really come in and like fix them, they just help them fix themselves.
Definitely.
Although he did, Willow did clean her apartment, he just couldn't handle it.
He needed to vacuum the floor because it was fucking gross. But I like, I have that. It's like in a very non-gendered way. I think that if you have a huge problem with how someone else, like someone else messes up their space, you just need to be like, hey, can I clean your shit? And if they say yes, then you can clean it. Like, instead of being mad at someone for being gross, you have to be like, this is my thing, and I just need to clean up your floor.
I think when I met my husband, he lived with a neat freak. And I loved his roommate so much, though. We got along swimmingly. He had all of his shirts rainbow order in the closet, which I really loved. And sometimes I would just stare at them because they were all Ralph Lauren polos.
And I'd like, I'm looking at your books that are also all rainbow ordered. So
rainbow order. It checks out 100%. Pleasing.
Yeah.
But one day I was just like, I could not stand how filthy. So they had two bathrooms, and the roommate's bathroom was immaculate. The most gorgeous bathroom, so clean. And then my husband's bathroom was like a frat boy's bathroom, and he was the only one who used it. It was the worst. And so one day he went to class and I was like, fuck it, I'm cleaning this disgusting bathroom. And then his roommate loved me forever. His roommate was just like, I don't even use that bathroom, but just knowing it's clean makes me love you. Like, yeah, I was like,
makes your heart feel better. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, thank you. I was like, I just have to. I'm not going to nag him to clean the bathroom because we're just starting to date. We don't know each other that well. I'm just going to fucking clean his bathroom, I guess.
Yes, that is absolutely true.
Okay. I do want to get into a conversation about, and we've talked about this before, but I love it so much, the role play in First and Forever. Because,
yes,
I mean, there's role play in all, like, I haven't read all of your books, but in all the books I've read by you, there has been, except maybe Begin Again Again, there's been some form of role play.
Yes. You know? Velvet Cruelty is the first one without it. Because it's like a dark romance. So like
it's its own role play in a sense.
Yeah, exactly. It's a deeper fantasy.
You can't inception that role play. Like role play within a retail, you know. Ugh,
yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But your role play seems to be getting stranger and stranger.
That is so true.
Can you tell us about the two big role play scenes in First and Forever and what your inspo was for these bonkers role plays?
So I feel like no amount of context is going to make this sound normal. But like, I've always had a thing about hysteria. Like, it's been widely debunked. Like, there's a really great Maintenance Phase episode about, you know, hysteria. The whole idea that Victorian doctors used to like help female patients orgasm has been widely like disputed scientifically. But I just found it like such a horny idea. I feel like repression is like it just like, it's like putting Play-Doh into one of those squeegee things and like it comes out like all bananas. Like, I feel like that's what we do to human sexuality when we repress it. Like, we don't make it go away, we just make it go into like fucking rainbow spaghetti. So I just really loved that idea, and I was kind of like, well, the only way you can ever incorporate that into a book is for someone to say, this is my specific fantasy. So that is Eden's specific fantasy. She comes from a very wealthy, like old money English family. And she just like has this kink where like a doctor is just going to like do sexual things to her and pretend that it's medicine. And Willow is like kind of simping after her, and he's like desperate to win her heart, and he's just like, I've fucking got this.
And into it. I love that. But there wasn't even like a moment, probably because he had his own like fucking weird ass role play and waiting in the wings. But I love that he was just like, you're into that and I'm into you, so I'm gonna make this fucking happen, to the point of like renting a goddamn room.
Yes, like, if there was renting a hole, and getting a desk in there and putting flowers on it.
Oh, like I'm not a role play person. I cannot actually. Like,
you never did community theater.
I was not a theater kid. I do not have that kind of skill or talent. The other day, my husband jokingly like referred to himself as daddy, and I was like,
you were like, no,
I was like, you are not a daddy.
Yeah.
No, like,
put a pin. I mean, I don't think I've heard of anything less daddy than like trying to like be like, I'm a daddy, right?
And the worst part is like, he's actually a daddy. Like, we have a son.
Oh, totally.
So it's just I'm like, well, technically you are a daddy.
You are a father.
You're not my daddy.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's fine. Mm-hmm. We don't need to be like that for each other. It's fine.
It's like my partner trying to be like, am I an alpha? And me being like, I'm going to let my silence be the answer to that question. That's for
like
you.
And then my DMs are like, I think you're a sub. And I was like, I think I'm a dom, buddy. Like,
Yeah. I think like, you're an internet weirdo and you need to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah,
thanks.
I'm like, get out of my DMs. And then if they listen, I'm like, ha, I told you I was a dom the whole time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like, I just don't I was like, I don't know where you're getting that vibe from. Like, just because you find me attractive and want me to be submissive does not make it so. I was like, if you paid attention to any of my content, you would know I'm a raging bitch.
If you're a misogynist though, like you just see, you're like, when a woman's aggressive, it means she's a sub. When a woman's shy, it means she's a sub. Like you just don't like women and you think they should be deferential to men.
You just
men,
only see subs. Like, it's just like, yeah, things, yeah. Like
their head is just like handcuffs or something. Women are just an ocean of subs because basically you want us all to be just living in Margaret Atwood, you know, fucking... what's that? The TV show
where the handmaids.
Yeah, you just like want to be living in the Handmaid's Tales. Like, yep. Get the fuck out of here, Charles. Go get therapy.
Yep. Why? That's exactly what I was. I was like, I don't think so. I don't think so. At least not yet. Maybe I'm open to all like kinks. I love reading anything, which is why I, like, just went so hard for these role plays. Because I was like, this is amazing. I want like just the next. I'm always seeking the next weird.
Like, yeah,
it's like my pumpkin fucking, like,
yeah, you know, I did see that in your stories and I was like, I was confused, but like I think I know what it is, but I don't know if my curiosity can extend that far. Like, it reminds me of that potato thing that you were talking about. Yes, last time.
Michaela and I, that was episode 3, I think, that we reviewed the potato book, and the sequel comes out sometime this month.
Yeah, and you're like, I'll be there. I'll be
also, yeah, I'll be there. Also another potato though. We talked about how I would love to have like broccoli come into play, or I don't know, a baby carrot, just like something a little bit different.
I feel like ears of corn are like quite a sexy vegetable.
You know what? They really are.
Yeah, like it's just. Although this is like a convoluted story, but I'm going to tell it to you anyway, because it still fascinates me. When I was like 16, one of my best friends was a guy called Callum, and we were like at his house, like, and I was reading his like zoo magazines, which do not exist anymore, thank God, but they were kind of like softcore magazines for lads, you know what I mean? And I was just like flipping through reading the batshit things they put in there, because I'm sure no guys actually read literally anything that's in there. And they had kind of like a diary, like they have every month they'd have like a diary from like a sexy woman, and she was basically like explaining something sexual she did that month. And this month's one, because I read a few of them, and some of them were like, you know, I hooked up with this stranger and blah blah blah, or you know, I banged myself with my dildo. But this one was that she got an ear of corn, used it as a dildo, and then cooked it and ate it with butter. And I was just like, to Callum, I was like, bro, have you read this shit? And he was like, no. And I was like, read it. And we were both just killing ourselves laughing.
Oh, like, my, I was just, God.
I don't know that you could safely fit a really big ear of corn inside yourself, but like, I just don't think that really happened.
No, that girl was just trying to be the weirdest story in those magazines. Or it was just some dude who like wrote in like,
yes,
fantasy.
Yeah, like, I feel, yes, like
this,
yes,
is a thing women do.
Exactly that. I was like, what man, like from the intern pool at Zoo magazine, was just like, yeah, fine, I'm gonna write this.
I feel, yeah, like that was the best story they had. Like they were just, maybe they didn't get that many, I don't know, but yeah, like that's what you're gonna put in your magazine. That's your name is going to be attached to a corn fucking story.
And it was that she ate it afterwards. And I was just like, but why? Like, I just find myself being like, I do think a man wrote it. Because I feel like it's like men think that that's really sexy. Because it's like, it's been down there and now it's in your mouth.
That was just some like freaking weirdo with a food fetish. Which, I mean, I'm all for food fetishes if you want to have them. But I don't think it is safe for a woman's vagina to have food in there. Like, I,
yeah,
just don't,
it's,
think
really bad.
I wince when there's, you know, they're like putting chocolate syrup on it, and I'm like,
that just looks like diarrhea. Like, let's get real here. Like, when people,
that sounds,
it's just, it's like you're smearing shit on yourself. I have this real, I've never done food and sex together in a book, because I actually find it revolting. Like, I love food and I love sex, but like those two things just don't belong together, yep, to me. Like, there was one person, I forget what it was, but they were putting like candy floss in their lover's vagina. And I was just like, yeast infection, yeast infection, yeah, yeast infection, yeast infection, yeast infection.
I honestly think it's something that I would say probably the majority of female readers, and I'm saying female specifically because they are, you know, vagina holders, because I feel like penis holders, people with peen eye would like would think it was would not understand the
just
nuance.
Just the look on your face as that kind of registered what you said. You're like,
oh my god, now they're just jerking off their dick in this story. But they met people with penises would not understand the nuances of a female vagina, most likely.
No,
except for all those male gynecologists, which like I don't want to get into that, but like it is a little interesting to me how many men choose to become vagina doctors. Yes. It's just interesting. You don't have one.
No, and it's very
it is lucrative, so I get it.
Did you just pick a job where you could just mansplain women's bodies to them all day long?
Exactly. Although I did have one amazing gynecologist, and he was an 80-year-old man, and he was probably my best gynecologist I've ever had. His name was Dr. Payne, which is awful. I was like, really? I was like 17 years old. I'm like, I'm going to a fucking the woman doctor I was supposed to be seeing canceled. Like I got there and they were like, you'll be seeing Dr. Payne instead. And I was like, I am 17 years old. I believe I should have some sort of forewarning that you are going to switch from having a woman look at my vagina, which I don't even want. I don't want that happening. I'm 17 years old to an 80-year-old man looking at my vagina. That's just like not.
And his name is Dr. Payne.
Yeah. Like I was like literally shaking like in the thing. And you know, I'm young. I can't speak up for myself, but he ended up being like the best gynecologist I've had. So I was like,
that's adorable.
Okay. All right, bud. My husband really hates, but I'm stuck in this loop of saying bud a lot.
Oh, why? I think it's awesome. It's like perfectly dismissive. It's like perfectly dismissive. It's like, yeah, how you call, like as Australians call people mate like that too. You're like, yeah, mate, that's fine. And he was like, I hate you. Like,
I was like, can like, you freaking unload the dishwasher, bud? And he was like, can you stop calling me bud? He's like, I hate it. And it only comes out exactly you said, like when I'm being like condescending or, you know, I'm like, all right, bud.
It gets two thumbs up from me. Yay. Like,
I'll tell him.
I mean, you don't have to live with me, but like I sign off on you. Did you get it from anywhere or did you just like pick it up?
It's just, I have an issue with that where I talked about this in my stories a little bit for anybody listening, but like where I'll hear something, a phrase, and I will then adopt that phrase for anywhere from like 6 to 9 months. It becomes part of my lexicon and I just live that way. So in 4 months, bud will disappear and be replaced by something else.
That's cool. I feel like I definitely do similar things. Like you just kind of pick up a word that you really enjoy and you just like start flipping it around more. Yeah, I feel like that's normal.
I met a cute boy from Boston once when I was in high school and he used the word wicked a lot. Mm. And then I used wicked for about 3 years.
Yeah, that's
it. Still slips out sometimes, but it was just like my brain imprinted on his Bostonianness. And they have like, I mean, you're from Australia. I don't know how much you know about Boston, but they definitely have their own language.
Yeah, it's wicked smart, like Marky Mark kind of shit. Like,
But this guy was way cuter.
Okay, that is fair. Yeah. Or like the one with Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, that movie.
I know exactly which movie.
Goodwill Hunting.
Yes, Goodwill Hunting. You are correct. I only watched the part of that movie where he like talks smack to some guy in a bar because I saw a clip of it and then I wanted to see the whole thing, but I've never watched. That's how I watch things. I've never seen the whole movie. I just watched the 5 minute part that I wanted to watch.
Because movies scare you, don't they? Like you're scared of movies? Isn't that one of your
things? Well, that's funny. I actually love horror movies. Ooh. Love them because you know pretty much is gonna, some blonde bitch at the end is gonna survive. Yes. And everyone else is going to die. And like, that's basically, that's every movie. When I watch other movies, I get very, very anxious. So I like to look up the entire plot before I watch the movie.
And that's fair.
It makes me very unpopular among my friends and family.
But I totally get it. I'm exactly the same. I love spoilers. Like it doesn't dampen my enjoyment of a story at all to know how it's going to end.
It does not, right? Everyone's like, oh, how can you possibly want to watch the movie if you just looked up the plot? I'm like, you don't understand life at all, bud. Like, bud.
Yeah, you know, like, you, yeah, it's like you
I really
enjoy
do
watching
use
it,
it
unfold.
I'm using it for like all the men in my stories that I hate. And then I'm like, I also call my husband bud, like, fuck.
although I feel like we've gone way off target from, I was meant to tell you what the second role play scene in First and Forever.
Yes, you're supposed to tell, yes. Okay, because this is the best one. This one I did not see coming. I didn't quite understand it. And then you got into it and I went, I think I have, this is a kink of mine. Like, I was like, ding, 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 like lights went off above my head. And I was like, am I into this? Yes.
Yes.
So tell us about this.
It's kind of a combination of two fantasies kind of coming together, which is that I love the idea of Willow, who's this very nice, kind of like all Australian good dude. And that like his fantasy is just wanting to be a fuckboy scumbag and kind of wanting to be pathetic and kind of like revel, but like someone who is like kind of upper class and they're sort of like, they really understand duty and they're really PR and kind of forward facing. Like, I think it's like really natural to want to just like, yeah, wallow in just being a pig and kind of like in a consensual way, explore what it would be like to kind of go down that totally different path of just like not giving a shit about any of it and being gross and creepy. So his fantasy is kind of that Eden is like a cam girl and that he's been paying her for weeks, like on her OnlyFans, and they're like going backwards and forwards and like he's being really pathetic, and that he ultimately kind of bribes his way into her house and ends up paying her for sex. Oh. And is very ungrateful and sleazy about it the entire time. And then
he's like pushing Eden's her boundaries the whole time. Yes. She's like, I don't want to do this, but like, you know, consensually.
Yes. They've set it all up ahead of time. They have a safe word, but like, he's very much like kind of treating her like a pig. Like he's like, she's stripping for him and he just keeps like grabbing her ass and like touching her pussy.
It's like everything you hate in like from men in real life, but then the fact that they've like already created the like rules of the game and like you said, the safe word, it just allows the reader to be able to, it's basically the ex-boyfriend of every other book is like who he's embodying in this character, but it's sexy because it's like consensual and you know, it's, you're able to just relax and be like, he's just playing a part.
Totally.
I guess is why role play is so fun.
Yeah, I feel like you get to be the villain. You're right. You get to be the villain and you get to be the hero as well. Like within a role play scene, like you can be anyone you want to be. And that's as true in fiction as it is in real life. And it's kind of like, everyone loves sexy villains and sexy bad boys. Like I've fallen for a million murderer, you know, like total creepazoids. Yep. Mm. But the books that always make me feel dirty is like the books where like he broke into her house and like, you know, and it's like, there's no comeuppance. The end of it is just like, oh, you like, we love each other. So it's fine. And like, that's the kind of thing that I like kind of leaves me being like, yuck. Whereas, you know, with this, it's like, I like the idea that you can explore that world within a much safer one. Like we can all admit that that's sexy, but it's sexy because it's controlled. You know, you're not like, it's not real life where a guy's breaking into your apartment and kind of like, you know, staring at you while you sleep, because that would be fucking terrifying regardless of how hot he was. Like,
well, I mean, how hot?
You're right. As soon as I said it, I was like, look, but you'd be like, can you just like calm down with this weird shit and can we just have sex? Like, I don't know why you're doing this. Like, can we just live together?
I hear that like all the time when people on like Ask Reddit and stuff will be like, what's like creepy? Like what do guys do that's really creepy when they're like flirting with women? And people will be like, look, if the other person finds you attractive, they will let a lot of things slide. Not everything. Like, I mean, that was a joke before. Obviously, we were joking. Like, we wouldn't want a man to actually break into our house and, like, watch us sleep. But, like, there are things that, like corny jokes that if a guy I wasn't attracted to said some sort of, like, lame-ass pickup line to me, I'd be like, fuck this, and probably, like, walk away. Meanwhile, if a hot guy or just somebody I found aesthetically pleasing said the same thing, I'd be like, I'd probably laugh and like be into it. And it's just, it's kind of like,
totally.
It's like that with romance novels too. It's like, you know, obviously like if the character is embodying that, which we find attractive, we're going to excuse a lot of their fucking psychotic behavior.
I want to say, and I also don't think this is a gendered thing. Amy Schumer used to have this sketch about like running into a guy who was talking about Kate Upton, that he hung out with Kate Upton. And he was like, she's so funny. And Amy Schumer was like, what do you mean? Like, what was funny about her? And he's like, oh, you know, we were playing ping pong. And she was like, get ready to lose. And Amy Schumer's like, can you imagine what his reaction would have been if he didn't think that woman was hot? He would have been like, fucking bitch. Like, it's not a gendered, like, you know, attractive people, you're just like, God, they're smart. And they're just like so, so funny and so intelligent. And my second anecdote would be Dan Savage, who genuinely has a rule. Like he does the podcast Savage Love and he gives advice. And his whole thing is like, what you are willing to do is directly in relation to how hot the person asking you is. Cause he had these male, like a male twin ring up. And he was like, me and my brother, like we're identical. Like we're pretty good looking. We're not into the twin thing, but this really hot girl wants us to do it. And now we're thinking about it. And it's kind of like, yeah, man, like, you know, what you're willing to do is very much in proportion to how hot the person asking you is.
Exactly. It doesn't even have to be like a sexual thing. Like people will do a lot. Like that's why attractive people do go pretty far in some. Yes. I mean, obviously people with money go even farther and they don't have to be attractive, but you know, attractive people can get in places, not just like clubs, but like into your brain in ways that like people you don't find a set. And it's not even like conventionally attractive people. It can be just like, if you have like a kink, like, and I always come back to foot fetish. Like if you have a foot fetish, you only really care about how like those feet look for you. You don't even, the person doesn't even necessarily have to be attractive, like to the society. And I just think that's like, so nice it's feet. So fun. It's fun.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah, totally.
Everybody has different things that please them. Like I'm like, that's why I feel like dad bods are making a comeback in, I don't know if they were there, but they're coming up in the romance world. You know, this idea of like perfect bodies is no longer like an ideal in romance novels. Rather than what, like reading about somebody you want to be, you want to read about the kind of the person that you are and the person you could be. Like these
totally, I feel like short guys too, like people are trying to write novels about shorter guys.
I've been trying to read some more short guy books. Do you know of any?
No, I don't actually. Like I don't think, like, yeah, I mean, you try not to hammer home the 6'3" and full of muscle kind of thing every single time. But I mean, I don't think I've ever gone out of my way to say a guy was short, even though I am into short guys. I generally date, because I'm 5'2" barely. So like I tend to kind of date 5'8", 5'9", like, you know, like that's plenty tall enough for me. But yeah, I kind of, yeah, I've never really put that into a book. I totally should.
I know. I talked about this with some people and we were talking about how it's usually the heroine is tall, not that the hero is shorter. So it's like he's tall, but she's also tall, as opposed to like they are both short, or he is shorter than her. So I've read a lot where like the heroine is tall, but I mean, I still think we fall into that trap of like what is attractive by society standards. And like, because we, you know, romance is a female dominated industry, we're looking to find heroines that look like us in relation to these hot god males still, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's difficult too, because it's like, the backlash to, you know, Mara having had plastic surgery, or the backlash to women that I've tried to write about, you know, it sounds ridiculous, but it's like, when you do make a woman beautiful and that she knows she's beautiful, people really don't like that. And by people, I mean women. Women really do kind of want the Mary Sue in a lot of cases. They want a girl who's beautiful but doesn't know it, because it fulfills this fantasy of like, you're not, because we're constantly told as women, you don't want to be vain. You don't want to be seen as someone who puts effort into how they look. Mm-hmm. So it's this kind of vicious cycle of, you know, you've got to look gorgeous without knowing it and without trying, which is impossible.
That's why I love Mara. And I tell people all the time, I'm like, if you want a heroine who's like pretty and she knows it and she made it happen.
Yeah.
Like, although like, I don't remember if, Derek obviously found her bewitching as a teenager when they get together for the first time, but like she is insecure and she gets rich and she has the money to make these changes to her to make herself happier on a daily basis, and she does that, and I think that's admirable. But I know a lot of people just still kind of turn away from the idea of like heroines having plastic surgery.
Yeah, which I just really want that to go away. And I'd like to think that we're moving towards a time where we just want to read more stories about different kinds of women. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that you can't have virginal, don't know they're hot women. It's just, we just want to open the spectrum to more experiences, because it's like, in my experience, I don't know a single woman who doesn't work very hard at being attractive, because that is what society demands of women. Like that's just, you know, it's just a choice that everyone kind of has to consign themselves to, because it's not really, you know, it's sort of mandatory that as a woman you will wear makeup and you will take care of your hair and your skin. You know, it's just, yeah, I feel like I'm going into my going into a very long gender studies rant.
No, but, yeah, it's definitely society puts so much pressure on women, and that's what makes romance novels so great, is that especially now we're just seeing all these different body types, all these different like lifestyles. Like, yeah, like you have heroines, like, well, before you'd have heroines who were like, I never wear makeup, but my lashes are long and black and my lips are always ruby red. And it was like, girl, just wear makeup. Like back then, yes. I was like, please fucking put some makeup on. Like, there's no shame. And like, I just did that reel where it's like, the heroine always smells delicious.
Yes. But
whenever the hero asks, she's never like, it's my perfume. She's like, oh, yeah. I don't know what it could be. Maybe my lemon scented shampoo. And it's like,
my body wash.
It's like, there's literally,
you're right,
in saying you are wearing perfume.
You're like, such a genius. I had never thought about that. And because I have my heroines putting on perfume constantly because it's just part of your beauty. Like, you know, but it's like, I've never read another book where a woman puts on perfume, or yeah, very rarely. You're so, like, I was just,
and the hero never puts on cologne, and yet they always smell like pine and leather and citrus. And it's like, where are these scents coming from? At least be like, I noticed his cologne bottle on his fucking dresser. Oh. At least acknowledge. I don't need to see every scene of him putting it on, but let's at least like just say, it's my cologne.
I have like such a thing, like there's like a part of me in an alternative universe that like is in academia, and I just write essays and like theses about romance novels constantly, because like my brain immediately started ticking and being like, why wouldn't we have heroines and heroes applying scents? And I kind of like started spinning this wild theory where it's like, I think we want to see it as natural. Like, you know, we want to see it as like everyone's organic and there's no artifice. And it's like something about applying a scent is like applying a fake kind of a fake front, or kind of giving yourself, yeah, trying to be attractive, yeah, when it's not, you're, no one's meant to be trying at all. It's all just,
it's
meant
also
to be like,
it's probably a lot harder for them to be like, her vagina smells delicious when it's masked by perfume.
Yes, you know? Yes,
they can't true. Be like, oh, her pussy smells so sweet. It'd like, be like, no, it's my perfume, bud.
It's like J-Lo's glow perfume, or whatever your first, yeah, high school perfume was.
It's light blue by like what?
Oh, is that, was that your first perfume? Yes. Would you, yeah. Oh, nice. Yeah,
I love it so much. It's still the scent that if I'm buying perfume, that's the perfume I'm buying.
Really?
I forget who the maker is.
Do you have one perfume, or do you have multiple perfumes?
Right now I'm using perfume that was handed down to me from, ooh, a woman who then became allergic to her perfume. So,
oh no.
It's just like three random scents of perfume. I don't even know what the brand is, but I like them. Mm-hmm. I also liked Happy.
Yeah, Clinique.
Yep, by Clinique.
Yeah.
So those,
yeah,
are like my two. Nice.
Ooh, very nice. Yeah. I like it.
I'm very classy. Again.
Yeah,
I have to. I smell like freaking like baby sweat all day. So I'm like three times a day, yeah, I'm like spritzing myself again with perfume. I'm like, let's cover, well, this up.
I naturally smell like honeydew melons, which is a fact that everyone constantly points out to me, because that's just how I smell.
Jennifer Armentrout, right?
Yeah.
I haven't read it, honeydews, but people commented and they were like, the fucking honeydew.
Yeah, like, I smell like, yeah.
I can't pick out the smell of honeydew in like a, like,
yeah.
I'm also terrible at scents. So I don't know who all these women are who are like, although I could probably pick out the smell of pine because it's like the only Christmas candle scent that I really love.
Really?
So I could probably, okay, like, I would be able to pick up that smell and the smell of cinnamon because my favorite candy is cinnamon. But other, mm-hmm, than that, I'm like, I would just smell and be like, you smell good. Like, who are these women who are, mm-hmm, like freaking scent scientists and picking,
yeah,
they're like the hints of clove and, yes, oranges burnt, mm, slightly, like what are you fucking on that you can smell all that shit? I don't fucking,
yeah,
know.
It's pretty silly.
Before we wrap up for the day, I'm curious, yes, what do you read while you are writing, or are you one of those authors who kind of can't read someone else's work while they're writing their own?
No, I read like, again, it's very hard to, I read constantly, Kate. I'm like quite the academic. I'm kind of always floating between like multiple ebooks, multiple audiobooks, and multiple paperbacks. Like if I'm really enjoying one, I'll like blitz through it. But like generally I'm kind of picking stuff up and putting it down. But then like, if I am struggling, I do find I probably switch more to podcasts or like YouTube, you know, like I think what I'm trying to say is I really don't have a structured routine. And I think like the more I write, the less restrictions I try to put on myself, because it's like whatever you feel like doing, like that's the right thing to kind of do at that moment. But yeah, I actually kind of find if I'm struggling a bit, I'll go back and read a scene that like really moved me in someone else's books. And I usually find that it kind of like gets me going again, because you realize like it's not magic, it's just words, like, you know, you sort of see
when it's someone else's work, you're kind of like, it can be done.
Yeah, totally. And if anything, like sometimes you go to like a popular, like a really mega popular book where you like know the author like bought themselves a yacht with that money, and you'll read one of their sex scenes and it's bad and you're just like, I can do this. Like sometimes for all the writers out there, like that's as helpful as reading something good. If you go read something bad that still somehow made a shitload of money, you can just be like, I can do this.
Yep, I've heard that actually from a few authors. They'll be like, I just remind myself like what has been published, and
yes,
that I'm re-energized to continue producing my content.
Totally. Like it's your thing. Like you just have to like be like, what I'm doing is useful to me right now, and that is enough.
So what is the last book that you read that you did kind of have to, you read all the way through, it was great?
So I know I read Brutal Intentions by Lilith Vincent, who
I've been meaning to, but I was waiting for, because that was part of the series, right? Or is
no, it's a standalone. Like yes, it's a,
I've
it's
been putting off the series until yes. It was finished, because yes. I'll read yours, but I try to, I know mm-hmm. I'm gonna fucking want to binge it.
Yeah, I hope so. It's also American, so it's, you know, it's an American novel, Velvet Cruelty, so I had to get my American on. And I was like,
I love Lilith Vincent is also used to write under the name Brianna Hale. Yes. And I've read everything that she has written. Yes. So I haven't jumped to her Lilith Vincent name quite yet, because she did jump right into that series and I was waiting.
Yes.
But yeah, who doesn't love a reverse harem mafia book ever? Like, I mean, it's everything.
It's everything. I finally read Priest by Sierra Simone.
What did you think?
Sorry, my voice just like went. It was really good. Like I really enjoyed it. Like I sort of whipped through that one too. I like was like, yeah, this is pretty hot. I totally get it. What did you think?
It's like, I like the writing. Like Sierra Simone's a very talented writer, and I yes. am not religious at all. I haven't been yeah. to church since like the day I got confirmed. My mom was like, you can choose whether to go to church. And I was like, I will never go to church again. And I never have.
Can I ask, were you a Catholic? You were confirmed?
I was Lutheran.
What's that? Okay. Yeah. I'm just like very interested because Americans seem to yeah. have so many denominations. Anyway.
Yeah, we do. But so that was just a preface to, I don't give a shit about like the dynamics of the church. And yes. yet I was like, I felt like he was disrespecting the church.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
I'm reading it. And I'm like, yeah. You made a fucking vow, my friend. Yeah. And you are breaking that vow. It felt like,
yes.
it felt like a cheating romance in a way. And I didn't, it was so weird. Cause like I said, I don't give a shit about the church. And yeah, I was like, I felt uncomfortable that he was breaking this vow. Like promising to be, I don't know.
Yeah, I totally get you.
So it was weird. I'm reading it, like, I don't give a shit, but I also kind of care.
Oh, totally. I feel like I always feel that way when there's like ethical workplace violations in a novel, because I'm just like, you can't be doing that. Like, it's just like
basically the premise of Actor Age.
Yeah, totally. Although I always tried to be like, at the very, like, I feel like for that book, that was me trying to say like so many workplaces have so many like sexist practices just like baked into the framework that it's kind of like insane. Like you sort of get into a company and you're like, wait, what? Like we do what? So like when I read that in other books, I'm like, no, the HR violations.
It's kind of nice though, because like you kind of made it to like the workplace violated her first.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So then it was like, I don't give a shit if she's breaking policy. Like, I want her to break policy. I want her to sleep with her boss. I want them to like fuck willy-nilly and, you know, break all
and
sorts of
rules. Take really long lunch breaks and inconvenience people. Yeah, totally.
Time theft. Do it.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. No paid overtime. Like, no unpaid overtime. Everyone can, join a union.
You found a nice little loophole there.
Yeah, totally. What have you been reading? Pumpkin fucking? Are you going to explain to me what that is, or am I going to have to find out for myself?
It's just, I mean, it turned out it was like a myriad of things. It was it was like a pumpkin spice demon who's like cream pumpkin spice lattes. It was a lot of Headless Horseman stuff. It was like a pumpkin king. I got a lot more wrecks than I thought I was going to get. It was very
strange. That's fair.
So yeah, those are my highlights. If anyone's listening and wants those, they're in my highlights.
Yum. Do you like pumpkin spice?
I've actually, and I just had this conversation with someone, I have never had, like, I've had a, like, pumpkin donut, like, but I've never had anything pumpkin, intentionally pumpkin spice. I've never had a pumpkin spice latte, a pumpkin tea. I had pumpkin bread once, but, like, I don't know if that qualifies as pumpkin spice. It has spices in it. So I don't know. I feel like I need to go out and first drink a pumpkin spice latte. And then read the pumpkin spice latte book.
I feel like you do need to do that. Cause when I went to America, like that was on my list of things to try. Like I wanted to try a pumpkin spice latte and I was like, yeah, this just tastes really nice. Like it just kind of tastes like pumpkin pie with coffee blended in. Mm. So I feel like you can't, you know, you can't complain about that.
I'll have to make some sort of content out of this.
You should I would watch that. I'm like challenging you to go to
it's
like
someone's
a
kink to watch me drink a pumpkin spice latte for the very first time. Like one of my followers is going to be sitting there on the other side of the phone like it's happening.
Yeah, they can PayPal you $50 to go buy a pumpkin spice latte and drink it on camera, and then that'll make somebody's day.
Honestly, like I will fulfill this kink, this specific kink. If someone has it and they're listening, I will fulfill this for you.
Yeah, you're like, I'll do it.
I'm sure even my husband would probably be like, it's worth it. Just go drink a fucking pumpkin spice latte, bud. That's what he'll say to me.
Amazing.
Other than that, though, I'm reading some sort of daddy trilogy that tricked me. It's not a trilogy. Mm-hmm. It's like a 6-part serial. And the first one was free. And I read it and I was like, I bet these are on KU. And they fucking weren't on KU. I got trapped.
Oh, you got dogged.
Like, Callista Jane.
Oh, okay.
So, and I just reread Choosing Theo again by Victoria Aveline, which is just,
that's a beautiful book.
It's just amazing. Yeah, like I think I reread it 5 times this year. I don't know what kind of hold it has on me. But like I'll literally recommend it to somebody and be like, I gotta go read it again. Like, I have no self-control. I have to read about, it sent me down a spiral of ugly men who like just don't think the woman will be into them. And the woman's like, you are fucking gorgeous in my eyes, sir. And it's just like, that is my kink.
That's such a beautiful idea. I really like that too.
Okay. We are running out of time. I refuse to pay for fucking Zoom. They're not getting my money.
Nor should you. Yeah, fuck them.
But thank you so much, Eve, for coming on the podcast and making it. I mean, we agreed to keep it to 30 minutes and now it's like an hour and I have no regrets.
It has been amazing.
Eve's book, Velvet Cruelty, is out next week.
Yes.
I recommend you read Captivated, like I always do, to everybody who exists. And then I definitely recommend you read Return All. And First and Forever. Just fucking read them all. I don't give a shit.
And I demand that you buy a pumpkin spice latte and you drink it. I that's what I demand.
I'll do it.
I want that contact. Yeah, I want that content. I want. This has been amazing. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. And read whatever the fuck you want.